Welcome to the Cyber Rats Podcast, where we're all about sharing the forbidden secrets and slightly embellished truths about corporate cybersecurity programs. We're ranting, we're raving, and we're telling you the stuff that nobody talks about on their fancy website and trade show giveaways, all to protect you from cyber criminals. And now, here's your hosts, Mike Rotondo, Zach Fuller, and Lauro Chavez.
Hello and welcome to the Cyber Rants Podcast. This is your co-host, Zach Fuller, joined by Lauro Chavez and Mike Rotondo. And we have a multi-part series for you here moving forward. This is going to be about penetration testing, cyber risk assessments, the things that you need to know. How many parts will it be? Well, that's up in the air right now. It depends on how long we want to talk about it, I guess. But there's a lot to be said, and there's a lot of confusion in the world of penetration testing and risk assessment. So we want to clear that up. But before we do, Mike, you want to kick us off with the news?
Yeah, so this is the headlines for this week. I tried to not go too heavy on SolarWinds and Exchange, but some of it couldn't be avoided today. First thing is, our evil ransom group threatens to launch DDoS attacks, call journalists and business partners. Idea behind this is that if they contact your business partner and let you know that you're being hacked and have ransomware, that you're going to be more willing to pay. So cool. Criminals keep
seen that before.
Yeah.
Firsthand. So companies out there in the wild. So
SolarWinds just keeps getting worse. New strain of malware found infecting victims. CISA is now saying it takes 18 months to clean up this mess. I'm going to guess it's closer to 2 to 3 years. But yeah, there's more variants out there. A malware can exploit new flaw in Intel CPUs to launch side channel attacks. More reverse engineering going on. A great deal of employees have inappropriate access to sensitive data. This is kind of interesting because this dovetails off of the remote workforce. And in this article, it says IT leaders express concern about inappropriate or malicious access to applications and data. 47% are concerned about malicious actors impersonating employees, and 41% are concerned about inappropriate access to sensitive information. The bigger thing is that 76% of employees had inappropriate access to sensitive data files, and 76 were granted inappropriate access to sensitive files within the past year. Either that's, all right, we're in a pandemic and we just need to get things done, or people are getting sloppy and lazy. But
you I'm going to go with sloppy and lazy. SharePoint.
We need to tie that stuff down and protect your data because it still matters. Huge rise in hackers submitting vulnerabilities during COVID-19. Apparently, hackers did have time on their hands. Bug bounties increased. Misconfiguring vulnerabilities rising by 310%. And submissions for both improper access control and privilege escalation went up by 53%. So this is interesting. Exposed passwords gave hackers access to 150,000 cameras. There's a camera company called Verkada that apparently does things like Tesla, hospitals, women's health clinics, psychiatrics, hospitals, jails, and even their cameras were hacked and exposed. If you're not living under a rock, this might be new to you. Microsoft Exchange attacks cause panic as criminals go shell collecting. Big Microsoft Exchange for on-prem hacks going on out there. The most decision makers plan to increase spending on cybersecurity this year. That's good news for companies like Silent Sector, so we like to hear that. 66% of them are expecting to increase their spending on cybersecurity access and because of issues with remote working and phishing and ransomware attacks. There's an F5 patch out there for a critical big IP pre-auth RCE bug. There's an additional 10 APT groups out there that are working on the Exchange servers. Most of them are espionage groups. One of them is a crypto mining campaign. The top 10 cybersecurity vulnerabilities of 2020 came out. And CVE 2019-19871, a Citrix server path transversal flaw, was number one. U.S. schools faced record number of security incidents in 2020. It's bad enough the kids would have to work from home, can't ditch, can't take snow days, and now we got security problems. And lastly, there's a new Linux backdoor called Red XOR, likely operated by a Chinese nation state. It's an undocumented backdoor targeting Linux systems, masquerading as a Polkit daemon.
So the only thing today on exploit database that I think is probably worth a note is Golden FTP server has a password. I guess we'll call it a misconfiguration of how the password is managed, how that authentication connection is handled by Golden FTP server. And so there is a buffer overflow that exists in that process. The exploit's been tested and verified. However, there is a disclaimer that in the case that it apps it, that it, you know, it runs, but it doesn't root, but there's still a vulnerable server that apparently the FTP server will no longer work anymore. So if you're trying this exploit out, make sure you're doing it in a POC. And for everybody using Golden FTP server, make sure you're updating past 4.7. And that's it. That's all I got that's worthy of news today for exploitation.
Well, outstanding. Let's dive into the deep topic of penetration testing, which is a wonderful activity to do, and everybody should do it. And there are lots of different kinds, and I'm sure over the next few episodes, we will get into the nitty-gritty details of a lot of information that people should know about penetration testing and selecting what the right penetration test is and such. But before we dive into that, let's talk a bit about the state of the market and maybe why there's so much confusion. And this is going to be some ranting here, at least on my part, but from my shoes, what I see is that the penetration testing industry, there's certainly been a lot of demand for it. And it's hard to find good talent to actually do penetration testing. And it can get expensive, and there are a lot of other things, but everybody's scrambling and try to figure out how do we deal with this in the marketplace as an industry, right? And so as a result, a lot of commoditized, kind of canned, automated, rinse and repeat, one size fits all. You could describe them in a whole bunch of different ways, but I think you get the gist. Solutions have come out there and offerings. And so the penetration testing world, you can find all kinds of stuff. And now there are a lot of options out there for the consumer of penetration testing. It doesn't matter if you're talking about your internal or external network or web application or whatever the case may be, there are options and it can get confusing for people out there. So today we want to talk a little bit about what's what, right? What to identify, the difference between these kind of commoditized CAM penetration tests versus one that actually has some expertise behind it and is done in a more meticulous manner rather than just with the outputs of a tool and CAN reports and such. So with that, Laura, of course, you run and oversee our pen testing activities for Silent Sector. I mean, what's your view on the market, on what people should look for as far as penetration tests? You know, what is enough and what is overkill?
Who are you even talking to? I thought I just did janitorial work for Silent
Sector. Well, you do that as well, but you know.
Okay.
Man of many talents.
You mean the other stuff? I got it. Well, it's certainly a good question, and this is certainly a good topic to get on, and it will certainly not be laid to rest in our short time today. But I think there's a lot going on, and like you said, I think what I see the most of is, and Mike sees this too, is a lot of the canned reports where an organization is, you know, typically it's two ways, right? Either they're trying to do business with a large organization, and they're saying, when was your last pen test? And then they just don't answer, and then go try to get a pen test, hurry up, quick, try to get a pen test sort of thing. And what'll happen, or you know, they're being, you know, required that of some internal process, right? And then same thing, right? We need to hurry. Well, let's go get a pen test. Well, if you're in a hurry for one, you don't have the time to, you know, really kind of understand or read Cyber Rants and try to understand what the differences are and what you should be asking to receive as part of your pen test. It's real easy to get caught up in, you know, a very cheap test that'll come out and it'll just be a canned report. Spit out, you might as well call it a vulnerability scan. It's going to call out items like your, you know, HTTP only flag is not set in your web application, or you've got X-frame options not set and you're going to get hacked tomorrow. And so these scanners will put out this golden information.
The golden poodle attacks.
The golden poodle attacks. Yeah, right. Poodle. Yeah, I see that too. You've got 64-bit block cipher still enabled. Oh, you're going down. You know, and my point is that first off, no modern browser is going to prefer to connect using a 64-bit cipher. This is 2021, okay? I mean, this isn't Internet Explorer 4, although there may be some people out there still using it. But it's not fair to these organizations that are paying good money, even if it's cheap, right? Even if you're getting a canned report, you're still paying a couple grand, okay? It's not so it's a bag of chips, all right? So, you know, you're still paying good money and you're getting garbage. You're getting garbage that you still got to sift through. And you're gonna send this pen test report over to your developers and they're going to look at you like, wait, what? Why do I have to fix this again? I don't understand. Now, that's not always the case, okay? Now, a lot of times if you've got like a big misconfiguration, like you've got PostgreSQL exposed or SQL exposed, or you've got, you know, a web root with no password or something, the automated scanner is going to find that and be like, oh, I found something. Those are certainly worth knowing and they're certainly worth finding, right? I mean, and so if you've never done anything, you don't know anything, you know, that's not a bad approach to just at least start with something that's a vulnerability scan, right? It's, you can at least know what exists out there. But, you know, when it comes to getting, I guess, the bang for your buck, there is some reading, I think, and studying required to understand, first off, the difference between the types of tests that I'm going to get from different organizations via the canned report or, you know, an actual manual penetration test or even a cyber risk assessment campaign or a threat hunt. There's a whole bunch of different terms that are getting thrown around out there, and there's not a lot of clarity on what they mean. And so you want to make sure that, first off, you understand what type of test you need. Really, if it's going to meet internal requirements, right? If you're looking at a governance framework, what do you need? Are they asking for internal, external? Is it a client or a partner? And they're saying you need to have a web app and an API test, and it needs to be external and an internal and a physical test. So understand that first. I think that's really important. And then I think it's important to understand what attack surface you're trying to understand, which is where my point comes in. Mike will assert this. I don't look at the governance piece first, because to me, that's kind of a check block. I look at how do we defend this technical asset deployment that this company is using to front their business. That's how I approach these things. So I look at the problem a little different than, maybe an automated scanner is going to look at it at scope. And so I think that's where you get more into a cyber risk assessment type of testing or a threat hunt, where they're going beyond what the scanner is telling them is there. And they're looking at the architecture that you've built your business on, that is sustaining your applications and software or widgets that you're selling or whatever places you're driving customers. And we're going to look at that architecture and we're going to find a weakness, a capability to take advantage of that. And typically anything good is sometimes not found. I mean, there's some good stuff found in the scanner, but just not anymore. Okay. Again, this isn't 2004. So a lot of the stuff found in the scanner from an automated perspective, at least that I've been seeing, is kind of garbage. Okay, I use it as a point of data intelligence, but I certainly don't bet all my work on what's coming out of a Qualys or a Rapid7 or a Nessus or anything other scanner. It doesn't matter. Even an in-map scan, okay, that just because there's ports open, there's always going to be ports open, right? So that's just the first step. But I believe that a lot of the stuff coming out of the industry today is just that. It's just an automated canned scan. I don't know, Micah, what have you seen that?
So I think one of the things that has to be addressed is that the scanner doesn't understand what compensating controls you have in place. The scanner doesn't understand the architecture of your infrastructure. The scanner doesn't understand how things work together. It is looking for what may be a vulnerability. And, you know, these things are built to detect vulnerabilities, right? They're looking for something vulnerable. It doesn't mean it actually exists or is exploitable. And that's where, you know, you get a lot of those poodle things and those other, the 64-bit cipher that you're talking about being, you know, called out as critical things to fix. And they're not taking into account what's really necessary to secure your environment. And I think what's happening also is, this is where, you know, A, we've got one side of the house where the business just wants to check the box and say, yes, we've had a vulnerability scan. There are those people out there that also are very concerned about getting the vulnerability scan and really want to know what's wrong. There are those that want the plausible deniability to say we had a vulnerability scan by XYZ company and they didn't find anything that they call the pen test. But I think there also comes into play where the MSP comes in place. You know, manager A doesn't really know much about IT or pen testing, goes to the MSP and go that's managing their infrastructure and says, hey, we need a pen test. MSP goes, okay, we can do that for you, and really just does a you know, a scan for them, or very automated, some kind of tool that does the work. And there's really no logic or thought behind it. And I got to be honest, I've seen some very bad canned reports from very big companies that read just, they're just horrible, that there's really nothing behind them. And I'm sure they're spending a whole lot of money to get those things done.
It's got three letters in the name, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Hey, now. Not pointing fingers, but.
Oh, the only, for the three letters, you only point one finger, and that's the middle one.
Yeah, you know, I well, you know, one of the things that I see a lot too is that, you know, we see this all the time where a B2B tech company is told, like you said before, Laura, it's told by their client, hey, you got to have a pen test. So they go get a pen test, and they have, you know, various options. They can go with kind of the you know, the cheap, quick, canned, automated approach. But the problem that they see, and a lot of times they don't know better, right, going into this. Maybe this is the first time they've dealt with this, or they're, you know, an emerging company or whatever the case may be. But they go in and they get this pen test, and it shows them a whole bunch of stuff. So they're like, oh, wow, I got some value out because this pen test report has a bunch of stuff on it. Granted, like you said, that those things haven't been validated manually by an expert looking at that stuff. But also then now their customer says, well, did you remediate everything that was found on the pen test? And it's like, now they got to go do everything so it actually ends up costing them so much more in time and resources to go do all that remediation. So they saved a little money up front, and now they just steered their whole dev team away from, you know, or their network team, whatever it is, away from their core, you know, business operations and creating, you know, new features and such, all to just do this remediation. When it turns out, what was pointed out on the automated results aren't actually exploitable areas of that environment. But now that it says that, and that's the report they got, now their client expects them to get all this stuff done. Because a lot of times too, they make that mistake of giving the whole pen test report to a client instead of a letter of attestation that's written specifically for that pen test, which a lot of companies aren't giving out these days, unfortunately. But so they're sharing all this. Now, the next thing that, you know, we've seen happen, of course, is they share this information with the, you know, Fortune 500 or whatever that, you know, they're trying to land this big contract with, and their security team looks at it and says, okay, we have questions. Let's talk about the penetration test report. And then the ability for their tester to really go through in detail can really make or break the kind of the image of that organization through the vendor vetting process. So if they can't get through our explanations about the environment and why the certain findings were labeled at certain levels of risk, it can become a real problem, and it can undermine their credibility. So what may seem like a deal in the short run can certainly cost a lot.
You couldn't have said it better. Scammers, you know, there are scammers out there for everything. You know, they're trying to cybersecurity bug hunts, the same thing. Like, I can't tell you how many clients we've had over the years approach me and say, hey, I got a random email by a bug hunter that, you know, found these things and wants to get paid. None of it is any good. It's all the crap we're talking about. It's like, you know, your cookie doesn't have the secure attribute set to it. Pay me. You know, I made a meme, if you follow me on LinkedIn, I dropped a meme the other day about the SpongeBob basically, you know, picking up the paper and saying, it's like, hey, I found an XSS bug on your site, pay me. And it's like, he throws it in the trash and warms his hands with it. that's really all it's good for. It is complete crap. And so you know, two things, right? First off, understand the company you're paying for a pen test, right? Know the tester. Are they outsourcing it to somebody? Ask them. We've dealt with, sorry to rant here, but we've dealt with wannabe cybersecurity companies that say they offer penetration testing. When you ask them what team tools do they use, they have no answers. Well, we don't know. We're looking into that. Oh, what vulnerability scanners did you guys do? Well, we're looking into that, right? Well, it sounds to me like you don't have a plan and you're not doing anything, but you want to offer services because right now, you know, again, scammers, right? And some businesses that appear to be legit can also be attempting to scam you as this kind of, you know, the need for cybersecurity rises in our country. and all of the people now want to get onto it. And now all these kind of shell companies are opening up saying, oh, we offer this, we offer that. And the truth is they don't offer anything that's going to be worth your money or your time. You know, so make sure you know the company, make sure that the tester can answer questions and replay attacks for you. If they can't give you instructions to replay or replay an attack surface for you, that they were able to identify, then it's hocus pocus. Okay. It's smoke and mirrors. Number two, just like Zach said, don't send them your pen test report, because that's got sensitive data in it about your organization. Even if no high risk items are found, it's still got IPs, DNS. It's going to have all kinds of data. If the company that you're doing business with from a penetration test perspective or threat hunt does not offer a letter of attestation for their testing services, you probably shouldn't use them. And you certainly shouldn't send that report. You know, try to get away with only, if it's all you have, it's all you have, but try to get away with just sending the dates and the table of contents.
Also questions about sending your pen test report in the mail. I mean, you're sending highly confidential data over, you know, to some company.
Absolutely. And then what are they doing with it, right? Like in the headlines, you said, you know, so many people have unauthorized access to data. It's because what are they doing, right? No offense to the governance teams out there that are trying to do the right thing for third party assurance, right? They're reaching out to third party saying, hey, have you had a pen test this year? Cool, send me the report. Okay, so shame on them for being data hoarders. And shame on you for sending that report over email, but they're going to stick it in a SharePoint site and everybody's going to have access to it.
Exactly.
You know it.
That's,
you know, the other thing is you educate yourself. There's plenty of data out there on what a pen test is. There's plenty of articles. You can, you know, there's a site called Google, and if you put in what is a pen test, it'll spit back hundreds of thousands.
How do you spell that? I'm going to write that down.
I think it's B-U-T-T. Actually, I heard there's a book called Cyber Rants that I think has got quite a bit of stuff about pen tests.
Cyberrants.com. Find it on Amazon today. that's for sure. You know, another thing too, in all seriousness, a good resource for people to look at is NIST 800-115. So Google NIST 800-115, and that's the NIST recommended methodology for penetration testing, and it covers all kinds of different pen tests and such. But it's a base, you know, methodology that you know, good pen testers are going to follow, right? You don't have to reinvent the wheel or anything like that. It's readily out there. National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's open source. It's there for you. So check out NIST 800-115. And it's, you know, do some research, get to know what a pen test is. And our goal with this series too, is to help you better understand what's what, in this crazy world of penetration testing. So, with that said, Mike, Lauro, any final thoughts?
Always remember, never forget. And that's it.
Yeah, and I just want to, you know, educate yourself on what you really need. What is the goal of your pen test? Are you just checking a box, or do you really want to know what's wrong? But really investigate the company that you're looking into that wants to do it for you. MSPs, you know, aren't security companies. So, you know, talk to a trusted resource, but do educate yourself. Just learn about this stuff. And realize cybersecurity sometimes seems really scary, but it is not the movie Swordfish. And it isn't, what was it, Superman movie? Anyway, it's not the one with Richard Pryor creating the giant machine in the basement. It's probably, most of our audience too young for that. Anyway.
I remember that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And Swordfish, yeah, the seven-headed Hydra that he hid in the FTP server at his old college.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good tool for pen testing. Still using
that's a super good tool.
Yeah. Plus you have those, you know, seven monitors hooked up together. That was really cool too.
Well, you have to have that to do it.
You have to have that. Well, it's hard to look at a DOS prompt in just one 24-inch monitor. You got to have, you know, your terminal, dude, you got to have it stretched out big. It's got to overlay like six screens. That way you can read it.
You know, I think that's one of the biggest misnomers out there is that people think pen test is all this graphical, really cool stuff. When in reality, it's just reading text.
It is.
I mean,
it's data.
What about the Hydra?
That's a fire. It's just a hydrant. It's a water hose. It's nothing really fancy. But it is. It's data science, right? I mean, so people who do it professionally, who do it for real, treat it as data science and nothing more, right? It's obtaining either, you know, the data's there to support exploitation or it's not. If your test and your company's giving you a bunch of assumptions to make, then don't use them.
Yep. Black and white, is or it isn't, right? And it's kind of like the Matrix. You can take the red pill or the blue pill. It just depends on whether you really want to know or not.
You can buy half of each and drink a beer and see what happens. I don't know.
I would not take those with alcohol. I'd recommend against both Matrix pills. And so would your doctor. Well, that said, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed our rants. More to come on this topic. And please rate the podcast. Let us know your comments, questions, reach out, and we will cover future topics of interest as we go along here. Have a great day.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.
Pick up your copy of the Cyber Rants book on Amazon today. And if you're looking to take your cybersecurity program to the next level, visit us online at www.silentsector.com. Join us next time for another edition of the Cyber Rants podcast.